Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that, stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Welcome, 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 party people. It is Monday, October 3rd. Beautiful Monday morning. Somebody's going to have to wake up Billy Joel Armstrong because September has, in fact, ended. I don't know where the time went, but, I mean, I'm looking outside. It sure doesn't look like October. This is gorgeous. How was your weekend, Ev?
It was fine, man. It was fine. I was actually here in studio for a short while, doing some special events for some of our fine sponsors, you know, working with the squad, with the team. Solid Billy Joe Armstrong joke, my friend.
Hey, the work's got to get done, and there's nobody better to do it. It might as well be you, right?
Chef's kiss. Mwah.
All right, well, this is Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian, and sometimes Will and occasionally Evan. Give us a call at 844-967-2789 to throw us a tangent for today. This is Devil's Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM Madison. We're on the Shaw 101 FM and Walk 540 AM Waukesha. Bull Falls Radio 98.9 FM and WXCO 1230 AM Wausau. And of course, locally grown radio 97.5 FM, WFHR 1320 AM Wisconsin Rapids.
That is quite a list, man.
It's only growing, so
yes,
I've been told, right?
I think there's even one on there. Maybe we're not totally, you know. It's happening so fast, you know, but we'll keep y'all posted.
Hey, there's nothing like good growth, especially when you got homegrown Wisconsin radio like what we're doing here. So we got some great tangents for you today. As Evan pointed out on our social media post Friday, I am in the King's chair for one more day. Now, the seat may be hot, but as we all know, the tangents are always cold.
So, you are just loading them up today.
Hey, oof. Somebody's got to do it, right?
Solid.
So, a little something I want to jump into. I was reading an article from Friday that I was unable to cover, but my guy, a certain Senator Bernie Sanders, had the new CBO reports come out, right? So the richest 1% of Americans now own over 1/3 of all the wealth in our country, which is a dramatic rise from even as recently as 10 years ago, 2012. Mm-hmm. You know, you go back to 2002, that number was about 35. Let me make sure I get the numbers right. The top 10% had, 15 to 20% of the wealth, which is now up to about 1/3. Now, the pandemic had a lot to do with this. We have seen trillions of dollars taken directly from some of the poorest Americans and funneled upward because, you know, trickle-down economics, it's essentially like a pyramid scheme, except in the opposite direction.
Well, and with the pandemic, hate to bring it up again, it's still here.
Oh, yeah. No, and it's not even over yet.
But we're living in an accelerationist society. Mm-hmm. Everything. I mean, it's like parabolic, and we're on that upside of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is picking up steam. It's pretty wild. And it applies to nothing as much as it does wealth concentration.
Well, it gets even better. So the CBO report said that the poorest half of Americans, right, which is 150 million total people, now hold only 2% of the country's total wealth. 2% in the hands of 150 million people, while the top 1% has over 1/3 of all wealth. This kind of income inequality is even greater than that of the French Revolution, right? This is historic levels of the rich get richer and the rest of us suffer. And I can't understand for the life of me how a global catastrophe like what COVID-19 ended up being, complete disruption of the supply chains top to bottom, people were losing millions and millions of people off of work, and nothing in society has fundamentally changed since then. I guess the one thing that I could point to that has been markedly improved would be the work-from-home nature that is kind of really taken hold. So many people that had the ability to now stay home or work from their pajamas, be able to watch the kids instead of paying morbidly extreme amounts of money for childcare services.
We don't need managers. Who'd have thought it?
And that's everybody who's trying to get you back to the office,
don't
right?
Tell my boss.
It's every middle manager in America who has now lost the ability to look over your shoulder and make sure that you're staying on task
to justify their existence.
To justify their continued existence.
Yep, exactly. Doing very little.
Exactly. And I think another thing that I was reading about recently that really doesn't get touched on a lot is corporate ownership of property, right? You would think that some of these massive multinational conglomerates would be happy that they're no longer having to pay the utilities on some of these massive buildings, the lights, mm-hmm. keeping the air on during the winter or during the summer, keeping the heat on during the winter. And then on top of that, you can now sell these properties. If they're in valuable locations, that's millions and millions of dollars. And your employees are just as, if not sometimes more productive, we're seeing through studies, by working from home. I cannot for the life of me understand why this is not...
Will, how are they supposed to commit tax fraud without assets?
Ooh, that's a good point.
How are they supposed to, bilk their losses against their tax liabilities, inflating square footage and property value when it suits them and deflating the numbers when it doesn't.
Meme about Mar-a-Lago, right?
Yeah.
Trump reports on its value, it's a small shack, but then when he goes to get a loan for it, all of a sudden it's the Taj Mahal.
It's why he's getting sued in New York. Letitia James, the fine attorney general up there in the Southern District, recently dropped some bombs. That was a beautiful, I think it was a Thursday. Boy, it was a nice Thursday. And it had to do with some of his condominiums, right? Mm-hmm. In his towers. And yeah, he would inflate the square footage by, 200, 300%. It was wild, saying it's a 33,000 square foot property worth $150 million, something in that. I think it was 135, when it's actually 11,000 square feet and it's worth nothing near that. And yeah, so lying to banks, lying to the government. It's fraud.
Just another day in the life. If nobody punishes you for it, then you're obviously going to continue doing it. Grifters got to grift.
That's right.
The old analogy of, don't ask for permission, ask for forgiveness. So he'll just do whatever he wants and then, I didn't know it was illegal. I'm sorry, my bad.
You're forgiven.
And so, I want to wrap that back around to the Congressional Budget Office report. So we know that this type of wealth income inequality exists, right? The vast majority of Americans recognize this. We see this in our communities. We
see
this in our day-to-day
life. Hasn't been
this way
since the 1920s.
Why is an 80-year-old senator from Vermont the only one that seems to be talking about this?
Because Bernie is our guy.
Like, nobody else. I have not seen coverage from this report from anywhere outside the Bernie media ecosystem. And this kind of reminds me eerily of the...
It's because they are the hoarders of wealth. Let's be real.
Yeah. Of course. And nobody's going to snitch on themselves or their friends or their family. And they just want to kind of keep the status quo rolling because the status quo works pretty well for the vast majority of them.
That's an understatement.
This whole situation reminds me eerily of the... are you familiar with the UAW 180 strike?
No, sir.
So going down in Racine County, the UAW 180 is currently on strike against CNH Industrial. And Bernie Sanders came down for a rally to support them in June. And these workers, they're putting their lives, they're putting the quality of lives for their family on the line to demand better treatment from their employer, a multi-billion dollar company. And the only person that I saw covering this strike in any way, shape, or form was, again, Bernie Sanders. Now, I went to this rally, and the attendance was excellent. Obviously, a lot of people came because Bernie was there. They wanted to see him. They wanted to hear what he had to say. But being able to speak with some of the workers at the ground level, which my organization did, you really see how gross this endless drive for unlimited profit growth at the expense of the people who are creating that wealth for you. It's just gotten to a level that is unsustainable, frankly, going forward. And
yeah.
I think we see that a lot now with in regards to Jerome Powell and talking about how they want to reduce inflation by reducing the workforce because, workers now have too much power. If there's one thing that's ironically against the American culture, it would be saying that the workforce has too much power. But here we are, because if a bunch of people lose their jobs, the market becomes a lot more competitive. you no longer have company, you no longer have employees that can go to companies and say like, oh, well, I got plenty of other options. Why would I take this crappy job at your place? People mm-hmm. are going to be forced to settle. They're going to have to take whatever job they can get if they want to be able to eat, if they want to be able to keep a roof on their head.
Or second job.
Second or third job, right? If they just want to be able to keep a roof over their head, because, you know, we were talking about fear on Friday, right? It can always get worse. Companies are able to hold that over your head. Your life might not be great now. In fact, it might be miserable, but guess what? We can make it worse. So are you content with the miserable but survivable life you have right now? Or do you want to fight for a better life and risk potentially losing all of the, well, meager, slightly enjoyable aspects you have to your current life?
Even more than, you know, meager, almost, I mean, you gotta have it. If mm-hmm. you don't have quality broadband internet, you're behind.
Broadband, oh, internet should be a public utility.
You're at
this
disadvantage.
Point, that's a totally different conversation.
If you don't have a reliable cell phone with data on it, you're at a disadvantage compared mm-hmm. to other people that, you know, have these things.
Mm-hmm. And in the modern world, like you said, I don't think it's just a disadvantage in the sense that you are unable to keep up with the things that other people vying for the similar job or other people in the same market might be looking for. There are a lot of job applications, for example, that can only be filled out online.
Yep.
You go back even to the days of my parents, right? It was, well, you know, here's the newspaper. Go walk in and ask for a job. Like, that world doesn't exist anymore.
There literally are no more local newspapers. When I say, you know, slight exaggeration, but they're owned by conglomerates.
Again, it's cutting their staff across the entire state.
Yep.
That's been a pretty big news story recently. And local journalism is vital to keeping a sustained, informed population, because if everybody's under one roof, that's one voice as the final editor that gets to crack down on any stories that may dissent on whatever narrative they want to push.
Wink, wink, nudge, devil radio.
Exactly. If you lose local journalism, you lose, honestly, the best opportunity for people to stay informed on their communities and what they need to know to make their lives and their children's lives and their families' lives and their friends' lives as happy, healthy, and thriving as possible. So we'll be right back after this break. This is Devil's Radio, 92.7 FM. Hope everybody had a great weekend, and we're so glad you're with us this Monday. We'll see you shortly.
Calls me from the cold, just when I was low, feeling short of stable. All the chin tins, and all she keeps inside is in on the label. And I break at the bend. We're here and now, will we ever be again?
Welcome back to Devil Radio, 92.7 FM. If you got any tangents for us on this beautiful, beautiful Monday afternoon, why don't you give us a call, 844-967-2789. So, Evan, something that is kind of near and dear to me, something that I want to kind of touch on that I have a little bit of experience with in the past, is streaming in regards to new age media and new age platforms. You know, the way that a lot of corporations have now been trying to connect with the youngins, the youth, the people that was me 5 or 10 years ago, but no longer is, because I'm a nice old man now. Well, I'm still a nice young man, according to you. But I feel like a nice old man. So there's a platform that goes by the name of Twitch. It was founded in about 2011. And after blowing up, it was purchased by Amazon in 2014 for $970 million. Now, the reason that I kind of want to point out some of the more nefarious behavior of these streaming platforms is, as I've been canvassing out, talking to people in my community, I heard a very interesting story from a local second grade teacher. She's talking about how her students no longer focus on schoolwork or will purposely not do their homework because, you know, I don't have to. I'm going to grow up to do X, Y, or Z. When I was a kid, 5, 10, 15 years ago, you would hear that sentiment from the star athlete potentially, right? Like, school doesn't matter to me. I'm going to go get a degree and then go into the NFL. So yep, they could, you know, it's not realistic statistically, but everybody has that dream, and it's backed up by the fact that you're playing youth sports. You are potentially dominating other kids your age. You're the biggest. You're the strongest kid in your class. So it seems at that time to be a potential viable option. Now, a lot of these students, as young as second grade, like I said, weren't focused on their academic careers because they just expected to grow up to be a Twitch streamer or an Instagram influencer or a start an OnlyFans page or whatever. These are kids as young as second grade,
which,
right?
Yeah, the fact that that's in their lexicon at all is
disturbing, I mean, to put it mildly.
It is. It's indicative of a lot, though. Please continue. This is fascinating.
And, well, so with these platforms, unlike being an athlete where you can already kind of compare yourself to your fellow students, if you're the most unathletic person in your class, you probably understand deep down that you're not going to grow up to be a professional athlete. But some of these streaming platforms, it's kind of anything goes. As long as you're entertaining, in a lot of ways, it's still the Wild West, and it gives the notion that anybody can do it, and that leads any child to believe that they have the potential to do this, despite the fact that the top-to-bottom disparity of these sites is exponentially worse than even famously difficult gigs like being a movie star or a professional athlete. Now, that doesn't mean the people at the top aren't making bank. For example, one of the most popular Twitch streamers, I'm not going to say their name, but was confirmed to have made $2 million between the months of August 19th and August of 2019, excuse me, and September of 2019 alone, just from their Twitch earnings. This doesn't count subscriptions. This doesn't count donations, because obviously all of these streamers allow you to donate to them directly. This doesn't count advertisement money. If they're sitting there with a can of Mountain Dew next to them,
sponsorships, yep.
Anything along that line. Their merch, a lot of them have their own websites selling and pushing out their own clothing line. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't be allowed to do this. This is capitalism 101. If they are entertaining, they deserve to be paid as such. I guess the point that I want to make is more the site itself, which, again, purchased by Amazon, so this indirectly is Amazon, using the promise of becoming an ultra-rich, ultra-successful, ultra-famous streamer to lure millions of kids into their entertainment ecosystem when in reality none of them will actually make it big.
I mean, and when you say none of them, we're talking minuscule numbers. I mean, you have another sort of variation on this this one I'm about to put out. But, you know, as of recently, this last year or two, to be in the top 1% of content creators on Twitch, but other platforms as well, means that you average around 20 viewers. Per stream, right? Now, that is not financially sustainable as far as a full-time job goes. Those 20 people are not going to provide for you what you need to live.
Mm-hmm. And I actually have personal experience with this as the pandemic started, which is actually the biggest reason that Twitch really blew up, right? A lot of schools were now done virtually. Children were sitting at home on their computer all day. Nobody wants to sit there and listen to a lecture on abstract mathematics or something. So they tune into their favorite gamers on Twitch, or their favorite personalities, I should say, because now these are entertainers. They're not just gamers. And the pandemic really caused the popularity of this platform to skyrocket. So I tossed my hand into the ring, right? I was like, oh, I feel like I'm an entertaining person. I grew up being told by my parents, you'll never get a job where you can play video games all your life. That's ridiculous. So I was like, you know, trying to prove them wrong, of course. Who doesn't want to do that? So I tried streaming for a little bit. I was incredibly proud of myself when I had two or three viewers, and I'm fairly certain that two of the three, if not all of the three, would have been friends of mine that were just trying to support me. It is very, very difficult to build a following.
And it's a ton of work, so I really want to be sure that we're not conflating, you know, this sentiment that, oh, they're just lazy and thinking unrealistically. That's not the case at all.
No, not at all.
It's a ton of work. It's a ton of planning. It's a ton of commitment. The consistency that it requires is emotionally draining.
Try sitting in a chair for 10 to 12 hours.
Yeah.
And just sitting around. Now try to play a video game.
Metrics aren't coming back. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're not seeing those view numbers go up, when you're not seeing that revenue come in, it's depressing, you know? if you're not prepared for the mindset to stay healthy while you're trying to do this, it can really wreck you.
And something I've heard from a lot of older people in particular, parents of friends, whatever, is, oh, you're just sitting around playing video games. How hard can that be? I mean, you're right. For 2 or 3 hours, video games are a ton of fun. It's a very popular hobby that a lot of people across the world share. But doing that for 10 hours, 12 hours, 15 hours, that's starting to get difficult to the point where it's hard to sit around for that long, let alone focus solely on this game. And you're not just focusing on the game. You have to entertain an audience, however many people that may be. We'll dive in a little bit into the numbers after this, after the break, but I got some numbers that I think will really shock the viewers in terms of just how great this wealth disparity is amongst streamers. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back, party people. If you have any ice-cold tangents you want to throw our way, give us a call, 844-967-2789, Devil Radio 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM in Madison, or on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM Waukesha, Bull Falls Radio 98.9 FM and WXCO 1230 AM Wausau, as well as locally grown radio 97.5 FM, WFHR 1320 AM Wisconsin Rapids. Now back to the conversation we were having about these streaming platforms, right, and the youth and how they're getting involved and invested in these entertainers. And again, we do want to reiterate that the people at the top of their, anybody at the top of their industry deserves to be paid accordingly. But we don't like just how manipulative the organization behind the scenes is, even in regards to the top-tier earners. So,
well, and I'm glad that you're bringing this up again. We had a listener texting in, sort of, what did you mean by grifting, right? And thank you, Tom, from West Dallas. Please continue.
So, I guess long story short is grifting is taking financial advantage of a situation you know to not necessarily be good or accurate because you know that there's money to be made there. We see this a lot in particular regarding conservative media outlets, people that come out of the blue all of a sudden and they're being called on to Fox News to talk about whatever topic it may be day in and day out. I think a great example would be Laura Trump, right? This is not a journalist. This is not a reporter. This is not someone with in-depth knowledge of the systems with which they're reporting on. This is just the wife of the son of the former president coming on national television to protect her family and their interests. But back to the in regards to Twitch. So the revenue drop-off between the top earners and the even middle tier and bottom tier earners shows that the 100th most successful Twitch streamer from 2019 made approximately $400,000 per year from Twitch payouts. This is the 100th most popular individual on the entire platform.
Well, and, you know, depending on the spread, hey, I'll take it. Not too bad.
Right,
you know,
well,
if the 200th is making $100,000 and the 5,000th is making $60,000, you know, it's a different story.
Well, so the 200th is making $270,000. Still very nice money.
Yep.
The 400s, it's about $150,000 per year. Still pretty good money.
Mm-hmm.
But can you imagine being the 400th highest paid athlete in the world? The 400th highest paid movie star in the world? These people are still household names.
Literally, yeah.
And so then you get into the 1,000th place streamer. They're making about $85,000 per year, which is very similar to what a software engineer might make out in the West Coast. Now, the U.S. Census Bureau states that the median U.S. household income in 2020 was about $67,000 per year. To make that on Twitch, purely from the platform, you'd have to be one of the top 1,300 streamers, okay? There are 8.8 million active streamers, which means you would have to be in the top 0.015% of all streamers to simply earn the median U.S. household income.
Now, what was that total number again?
Of where you were on the Twitch streamer?
Just how many streamers in all?
8.8 million active streaming accounts
right now.
So
we're talking millions and millions of active accounts, essentially streaming to nobody. You know, some of these people, they're killing time. It's how they relax. It's how, you know, they're just having fun. Other people are really diving into it. They have lost faith in the economy's ability to provide, you know, for them a meaningful, comfortable life.
Well, they're making next to no money while the platform itself is able to advertise, we have almost 10 million content creators, nearly endless entertainment for you at the touch of a finger. It's, in a way, I don't want to say free labor, because, you know, it, in a way, it's more like sales. You're commissioned based on each viewer you have, in a sense. But this is, these are millions and millions of disenfranchised people, like you just mentioned, that have completely lost faith in the system. They've seen, if they're my age, they've seen now multiple economic collapses in their life. They were told, hey, go to college, get a good degree, and then you can come out into the real world and make some money. So they're massively in debt, which kind of beholds them to whatever job they have, because they got to pay off this debt, right? It doesn't give them the time, the energy, the opportunity for societal advancement, as they are simply trying to survive day in and day out. And I think millions and millions and millions of Americans have been kind of trapped into this system. And so Twitch has kind of gotten the brunt of our aggressive rhetoric on this episode, but they're not the only ones who are doing this. You look at other sites, for example, Instagram. If you want to be an Instagram influencer, Instagram is putting these famous, powerful, successful accounts in your search bar every day. They're putting it on your top page as you're scrolling through so that you see these people and you think, oh, that's a cool life. I want to live that life. When again, it's a very, very small handful of the total amount of accounts on this site. And that's not even getting into the other negative implications that that apps like Instagram and Facebook have on your life. Instagram in particular, something I want to talk about. There's an a study done by Sage Journals. Social media have been growing rapidly during the past decade. However, it remains unclear whether it makes people emotionally healthy or less. Now, we have found that Instagram and other social media apps like Instagram, it kind of serves as a highlight reel of your life, right? Nobody's going to post the embarrassing things. They're not going to post a terrible picture of themselves they took at a restaurant where they look, you know, tired and like they should be at home. Nobody wants to do that because everybody wants to make themselves look good.
And it's polar extremes, that or drama, the really sad moments.
Mm-hmm.
Or the really happy moments, or the beautiful moments.
But why? Why is it always those type of moments?
Because that's what people aspire to.
And because that's what draws engagement. Remember that on a site, if you're free, right, you're the product. You're not paying for anything.
Yes, sir.
So with Facebook, with Instagram, with Twitter, you are the product. Engagement with you is the product. And Facebook in particular, as Mark Zuckerberg so plainly said when he was speaking with Congress a few years ago, we sell ads, Senator. Facebook is a marketing platform designed to keep you engrossed and engaged as long as possible, because the longer you spend scrolling their website, the more ads you are seeing, in theory, the more you are purchasing the products of which you had just seen in the ads. So it's almost, it's kind of cyclical that they want to get you angry, they want to get you engaged and involved and commenting and pissed off or whatever about whatever you do and say, because they know that the more engaged you are, the more they can pound you in the face with ad after ad after ad after ad. And I actually got a really good friend of mine, shout out to Charlie, that has worked in the industry in the past. He's kind of been showing me this over the past few months, right? Where to look, how to see the little tricks of the trade that they do in situations where you might not have thought that this was advertising. And he pointed this out a lot on Twitch in particular with not just the obvious examples of they have a Red Bull can next to them.
Or the little mini fridge full of Monster.
The Monster mini fridge next to them. They're wearing a Gucci jacket or something along those lines. But just the way they do and say and phrase things, talking about how they went to lunch at blank, and make sure they always point out, like, yeah, I had Chipotle today. God, it was so good. My favorite food is XYZ. And they have their friend in the background saying, like, oh, really? I love ABC.
Sure. And
these kind of like little tricks of the trade that they can do to kind of supplement their own income, despite the fact that some of these people are, you know,
mind, you know, hey, whatever. You know, product placement is nothing new. If you're watching movies these days, the good guy always has an iPhone, the bad guy always has an Android. Like, that's a deal with Apple.
That's actually a hilarious example that Apple quite literally negotiates into the contracts they sign with these
movies. That's right. If you want to show an iPhone on screen, you know, on an internationally published piece of content, then yeah, villains are not allowed to use iPhones.
Somebody spoiled the ending of Knives Out a few years ago because of that. They pointed out immediately, like, oh, this character is using an Android. This has to be the bad guy.
Which, and you know, that is a funny example, but that doesn't even bother me so much, you know? I mean, really, it's this two-part problem where this sort of obsession with creating content and then monetizing your own content, right? That alone, I don't have a huge problem with. How widespread it is, how you can talk to, you know, children in school, second, third, fourth grade, and this is what they're aspiring to.
That's their long-term goal, right? They don't want to be an astronaut anymore. They don't want to be a doctor. They don't want to be a lawyer.
That's indicative of something, you know? Yeah. That's indicative of that sentiment that the economy cannot support them. And I cannot say for sure where they're getting this, right? Like, what has convinced their tiny developing mind that this is the only way? I'm not sure what the answer is there.
I think that, you know, they see the lifestyle that they want to live from their favorite entertainers, from their favorite video game players, whatever.
Maybe they see their parents struggling or stressing, you know, where they're just seeing two different worlds. One of them presented clean, you know, perfect, clean, and
it's an idyllic world in front of you where nothing can possibly go wrong.
And
I
you're
have
rich,
fun all day. I'm
and you
rich.
Make money doing what you want to do, all these things, yep. And then they see mom and dad come home at night, tired, dirty, stressed out, not enough money, can't get the toys they want, all
they
that stuff.
They got screamed at by their boss today for something that wasn't their fault. They're working 10 to 12 hour days, 5 to 6 days a week, so they're not even able to spend time with this child, let alone teach them of the world that they want to live in or that they want to see. You're right, it's a broken system, and it's cyclical in nature. And unless we do something about it, when I say we, I mean, you know, the working class in general, because all we have is each other. It's a point I made on Friday, and it's a point that I will reiterate until the end of time. We don't have the money, the connections, the influence to be able to you know, at a large level, change the way that human beings think and function, but we do have the ability to talk to our friends, our family, our neighbors, our community, make sure we're all on the same page that without each other, we have nothing. That's all we have left. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, hey, you got to remember, Will, no one wants to work anymore.
Right? Nobody wants to work anymore. It's the Simpsons meme again. Nobody wants to work for you anymore.
No one wants to sacrifice their body for $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, with this, I can honestly respect it. It's not great when I want to go to Culver's and, you know, they're closing 2 hours early because they can't staff it. You know, hey, yeah, wish I could get my fries, whatever. But again, it means something. People aren't lazy. The unemployment rate in Wisconsin is low. People are working some two or three jobs, you know?
If Culver's is closing early, it's their responsibility to make sure that they have employees on staff. And the way that you have employees on staff is A, you treat them right, and B, you pay them properly for the work that they're providing you.
And we're behind the ball here. Even if people start raising wages, which they are, you know, I'm seeing people, wages have raised in some cases $2-3 an hour in the last year, right?
Inflation,
on the posted
but that's
sign.
Inflation. And that's why Jerome Powell's stepping up and saying, like, hey, we got to cut down some of this workforce, right?
And it's not fixing the problem because we're behind the ball. People have lost faith,
mm-hmm.
right? It's it can be mentally exhausting to enter the workforce again and again and again when you're not getting what you need, right?
And when you lose faith in the system, you become apathetic. What do? You stop voting, you stop caring, you turn to other avenues of making money. I don't think streaming is the only one that fits into this category.
Not at
Something
all.
Like resell on Amazon that blew up over the course of the pandemic.
Rideshare,
Uber, Lyft. Yeah. I mean, there are tons of examples of people have kind of figured out that I can make money doing my own thing where I'm my own boss. I can make my own hours. I no longer have to fit into whatever mold the establishment or my previous employer, my corporation, whoever it was, tells me to be. I can be my own person, and while the money might not be as great, in some situations it's probably even better.
Mm-hmm.
But in theory, let's say you left your cushiony corporate job where you were miserable all the time, but you made good money. You only got one life to live. I'm a big proponent of do what you love and you won't work a day in your life. If you have the ability to be happy every single morning when you wake up going to work instead of waking up every Monday like, dude, this like today.
Yeah.
I got to wake up today and I was like, all right.
Let's do it.
I'm coming down.
Doing some
radio. We're on Dueling Tangents today. The tangents will always be ice cold, and I get to participate in that. I get to do something that I want to do, something that I love to do. It just, it makes life so much more worth living. You know what I'm saying?
That's the really sinister part, right? Is they're exploiting this ideal, you know? Twitch, the pay share, you get, it used to be 50-50, right? For
until
every $5
recently,
sub, you would get $2.50 in return. It's now a 70-30 split. Right, so the creators are keeping, or excuse, that begins in March of 2023, a 70-30 split. You get 30% of the money that you bring in creating your content,
despite the fact that you are the sole. You should be, in theory, the sole owner of your own content, because that, you know, we know Amazon's not making enough money.
No, goodness gracious!
All right, this is Devil Radio 92.7 FM. You got any ice cold tangents for us on this beautifully warm October Monday? Give us a call, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back, party people. Give us a call if you got any tangents you'd like to throw our way. You got one more session with me. You're stuck with me still for a little bit longer. I'd love to hear from you. 844-967-2789. We do got one call on the line. Mark from the SAC. How you doing today, Mark? What's up?
Doing okay. Well, just I was thinking earlier today the previous show that got me thinking about Scott Walker wanting to turn us all, the educational system in the state, to just produce, you know, just crank out workers for industry, and, you know, we're just putting workers and consumers rather than citizens and participants in our democracy that we were supposed to have in this country. And that it's interesting how that those of us who get a little bit something, we're starting to make some gains as far as wages. You know, I'm retired now, but there's starting to be some gains as far as wages, you know, wages starting to increase, but then they kick inflation in to take away a lot of that. But let's remember what Alan Greenspan, of course, the apologist now, said he really didn't mean that when he said, as he said it, but apparently there was people that interpreting what Alan Greenspan did back in the 80s, that workers are supposed to feel uncomfortable. They're not supposed to be comfortable in their existence. And maybe that is that what Jerome Powell is after today, you know, that I don't see his actions increasing the interest rates as doing anything about inflation at all, other than making it more difficult for consumers as far as, you know, the money they're paying in interest, because the bankers are just going to, you know, tack on more when they're, you know, for credit card interest, and because they're not going to eat that. But they're borrowing the money at 1% and they're making, you know, 25% or more.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I mean, it is just a, you know, it's an Ayn Randian world, and everybody's supposed to be out for themselves, and that's not how we're supposed to be.
You're exactly right. Yeah. Yeah, it's dystopian. And I think that's another mechanism that the system uses to kind of quell any potential rebellion is, if you're so desperate and struggling just to watch after yourself, you have no time, you have no effort, no ability, no energy to be organizing amongst your fellow people in your same class, right? You don't have the ability to kind of sit down with other people and say, like, hey, guys, we've had enough of this. Or, for example, if you want to go out and canvass for a candidate that you support, but you are stuck working in the office 12 hours a day, you get home, it's already night, it's too dark to go out and do that. You can support them financially, I guess, but then again, everybody's going to take their cut, like you just said. And unless you're fortunate enough to have earned enough money to give away that type of revenue towards a candidate that you support. And I guess at the end of the day, so many of these systems are intertwined. So many of these problems, this systemic problems kind of play off of each other, that I feel like it's kind of, you just need to unravel that one string and everything will start to fall apart. How we are able to get that one string unraveled, that's a totally different question. I think the easiest way to start would be Citizens United, right? As soon as you equate money to personhood, you know, one person, one vote is kind of the purpose of democracy. But
it's really hard. It's hard to overstate how big a deal Citizens United is.
Yeah, unlimited really is. Dark money thrown into U.S. political elections that could come from anywhere, right? these are not necessarily wealthy Americans that are the only ones donating to these super PACs. These are multinational corporations. These are potentially world leaders of other nations. You know, you just don't know where this money may be coming from until it eventually finds its way into American politics. And that's why you're now seeing some of the most expensive races across the nation. I believe the Wisconsin governor's race has already become the most expensive gubernatorial in United States history. The Senate race, every other commercial, you know, I don't watch a ton of TV, but I've heard from my friends and when I've been at, you know, getting a haircut or whatever where they have televisions on, every other commercial is some kind of political advertisement. And I just don't understand how the vast majority of the powers that be can see this and not recognize that at some point this wall of cards is going to come tumbling down.
And a small primer for our listeners there. Citizens United, the long and short of it is, it's a Supreme Court ruling that ruled that essentially money equals speech.
Money is free speech.
So if you limit a corporation's ability to, you know, donate tens of millions of dollars to dark pools, then you're limiting their free speech. And since corporations are people too, you know, it's sort of this circular logic that's...
Yes, and what it becomes in practice is more money equals more free speech, more money equals more input, equals more influence.
It's twisted.
Yeah, yeah. We're essentially admitting that America is three corporations in a giant trench coat trying to do and say whatever they can with,
I love
with no
it. Repercussions. Oh, man, I love it. That's some really wonderful, wonderful imagery.
And, you know, I guess one little thing I want to finish up on in regards to the social media platforms that we were talking about, because I see this all the time and I've heard this from younger family members in particular, the highlight reel, right? Instagram, everybody's posting their best pictures. They're on vacation, they're smiling, they're looking good. It leads those who are viewing to think, oh, this person's life is incredible. You're never seeing the negative moments, you're never seeing the bad times that these people live, but you're only seeing how insanely cool their life is, and you're going to inevitably compare yourself to that. And because you're comparing yourself to a fictional version of their life, it will never live up to that. It can't. You're not comparing it to someone's actual life. You're comparing it to their highlight reel. It just destroys self-esteem and self-confidence. And when the goal of these platforms is to drive engagement, keep you on them as long as possible, each second you're feeling worth more and more worthless. It's no wonder that we're seeing incredibly high levels of depression and
discontent
type issues, right? So I was so happy to be able to come and spend some time with Devil Radio 92.7.
Man,
it's always good to see you, Ev. I love being on the hot seat because no matter how hot it gets, we are always staying ice cold.
No, I'm telling you, oof, you're onto something there, man. That's a nice little tagline. By the way, my people, he came up with that. That's his. He came in hot with that one today.
I'm not trying to pitch myself to Amazon's marketing team or anything, but you know, hey, Amazon's marketing team.
Take the money, don't sign anything, and just run.
don't tell them my little ad on there, but
just don't sign anything.
I'm not selling my soul to that. Not when we have great local progressive radio like Devil Radio 92.7. So I was invited back to co-host a second time. I feel like I have earned my stripes as maybe being considered market pantry worthy now. I am no longer the Amazon Basics, but I still have a lot of work to do to get to the platform I want to be at, which is of course Kirkland Signature. So
wait, what? Say that again.
Say what again?
Where are you trying to get, what? Why are you stepping on our shoulders to reach?
I inevitably want to be considered the Kirkland Signature version of Luke and Brian.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm Market Pantry right now, but we're working on it.
I like to say that we are Luke and Brian at home, right? Kid says, Mom, I want Luke and Brian. And
then she says,
we have Luke and Brian at home.
We're Diet Luke and Brian.
That's right.
It's an important rule. Somebody's got to play it because Luke and Brian can't be here all the time. They got their own stuff to do. So Devil Radio 92.7 FM, WTTN 1580 AM Madison. It was great to be here. I will see all of you soon, hopefully. I love all of you. Have a great rest of your Monday. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, my friend.